Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
This year is the 250th anniversary of Jane Austen's birth, and yet somehow after that passage of time, her novels seem more popular than ever. Down through the years, she has inspired a myriad of TV shows and villains outside of the lush adaptations of her novels. Here to talk through the enduring appeal of Austen is Ellen Howley, Assistant Professor at DCU School of English. Ellen, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Derval. How are you?
Yeah, it's amazing. Look, I mean, they're expecting a big tourist boon in England this year with all of the balls and the bodices and the bonnets that people are travelling all over the world to channel their inner Jane Austen. But remind us of some of the greatest hits.
Yeah, so she's known primarily for six novels that she wrote, all of which were published anonymously. But of course, the most well-known would certainly be Pride and Prejudice, and then maybe Sense and Sensibility and Emma. And then you have Mansfield Park and two books that were published after her death, Northanger Abbey and Persuasion. And as you mentioned, these books have inspired, you know, adaptations, spin-offs, interpretations for many, many years, the earliest being in 1938. So almost 100 years of Austen adaptations on top of the novels themselves.
I mean, obviously, Ellen, she was writing about a very different time and a very, very different society. So what do you think the enduring appeal is, you know, that she is still this cultural touchstone after, you know, 250 years?
Yeah, for in terms of the novels themselves, I just think they're so brilliantly written and so well observed. But I think the appeal that lingers on is that she's very interested in kind of small groupings of society. And ultimately, that's kind of how we live our lives as well. We know a kind of certain amount of people, and we're generally interested in the intrigue that is going on, you know, around us, on top of course, maybe global events and so on. But the day-to-dayness, I suppose, of the life and the society that she's interested in still appeals to us and has been translated into some of those adaptations. For example, one of the most famous kind of adaptations was her novel Emma became essentially the plot of Clueless. The 1995.
The peerless Clueless.
Absolutely. But to think of kind of putting Jane Austen in a high school setting might seem strange, but actually it's kind of the perfect recipe, because when you're in a high school, you're just really interested in who's dating who, who's, you know, talking about who, what is everyone wearing, what car are they driving in the case of Clueless. And it just worked so brilliantly.
Because at that time, it would have been all of the, you know, people would have been communicating with letters. Today, it's Snapchat, it's, you know, all of those devices. But I suppose maybe what is universal and has endured is that way we communicate with each other.
Yes, and I think one of the things that she's ultimately interested in throughout her novels is really like, what are the rules of engagement of her society? How are you supposed to act? What's kind of, you know, transgressive? What gets people in trouble? And what is the kind of the correct way of going about, you know, particularly, I suppose, finding a husband in the case of many of the novels.
Because, of course, marriage is so central to all of her books, because that was your main route, you know, for most, to economic security, to status. And yet she has, you know, these complicated heroines, which I love. And I'm just wondering, because she didn't set herself up as the morality police. So what do you think she was saying both about women and to women at the time?
Yes, definitely. She kind of contrasts some of the writers that were writing just before her or publishing around the same time, in that none of her books are kind of moralizing. They're not telling women how to be or how they should be. Instead, I think what she's doing is kind of holding a mirror up to the society, and showing, you know, society itself in a way. And sometimes the view can be a bit ridiculous. Sometimes it can be lovely. For example, you know, Elizabeth Bennet, who I think is probably the main character that we all love at some point from Pride and Prejudice, she called her the most delightful creature has ever appeared in print. So, you know, even she had a lot of time and respect for Elizabeth in all her kind of complications.
And obviously a lot of it is down to style and tone. So, you know, she's not viewed in the same way as Dickens or the Brontes, although she might arguably be, if she were here now, more commercially successful. And it made me think of, you know, do people look down on her lightness of touch in the same way perhaps that many people today still look down their noses at, and I'm doing air quotes here, women's fiction, despite often its runaway commercial success over other genres?
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, the novel itself as a form was something that people kind of looked down on at the time that she was writing it, in a similar way that certain genres now are looked down on. I think if people look down on her, it's perhaps because they have that view of, you know, it's all balls and bonnets, and they maybe only know the adaptations, which can sometimes, you know, not that narrative voice doesn't always translate, even though there are some great adaptations as well. So, you know, I think she's very respected. I was speaking to colleagues in DCU last week who still think Pride and Prejudice is great. And a colleague from Trinity, Stephen O'Neill, actually pointed out to me that Thomas McDonagh, who was one of the leaders of the 1916 rebellion,
was a fan.
Big Jane Austen fan. He taught one of his last lectures before the rebellion on Austen, and his students were asking him about the rebellion and to give him details of the rising, but he would only talk about Austen, and finished up by saying, "There's no one like Jane, lads."
There is no one like Jane. And imitation, as we know, is the highest form of flattery. There have been so many adaptations over the years. You've already mentioned Clueless, but Bridget Jones also?
Yeah, that's, I mean, the other kind of iconic, you know, taking the it's not a kind of trying to film an Austen novel, but taking the plot of Pride and Prejudice and translating it to, you know, into the 21st century. So to the extent that the character himself is actually called Mark Darcy in the books. And then, of course, they also got Colin Firth to play Mark Darcy in Bridget
Jones. In a
wet
shirt.
Yes, I know. They even recreated the wet shirt famous scene. So, yeah, so it really kind of follows similar plot points. You have the kind of Hugh Grant as the kind of, you know, heartless cad who sort of seduces Bridget and promises everything. But
she sort of monopolized the heartless cad, didn't she? You know, others had it in their plots, but she really that was probably one of her timeless gifts to us.
Absolutely. And you see them across many novels in Sense and Sensibility. There's Willoughby, who's even maybe worse than Mr. Wickham, because he, you know, tells Marianne lovely poetry, makes her, you know, wonderful speeches and all of that, but ultimately, you know, really leaves her reputation in ruins and her heart completely broken. So there are in many other of her novels as well.
Yeah, and which are themed through everything. I don't know what you would have made of Pride and Prejudice or Pride and Prejudice as the Zombies. But can I ask you, and it's a, you know, it is true devotees will be incandescent at the prospect that she has any detractors, but there was a very funny review of Pride and Prejudice on Amazon written by a young guy who said, "It's just a bunch of people visiting each other's houses." The way he's not wrong.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, he really isn't. She herself, Jane Austen herself, said that she was quite happy kind of exploring three or four families in the village. So, you know, it's an accurate analysis. If he doesn't like that kind of novel, that's perfectly fine, you know. But in some ways, you know, I saw it described in some ways, you know, not a lot happens. They're not extremely plot heavy, but in other ways, in the detail of the kind of everyday life. And, you know, there are some hilarious characters in it, particularly the kind of, you know, the meddling mother or aunt who's trying to fix up everyone. You know, I think there are really, really funny moments across her novels as well.
Well, whether sometimes people critique her happy endings, but 250 years later, we are still talking about her and wearing bodices and bonnets and going to balls. But for now, thank you very, very much, Ellen Howley, Assistant Professor at the School of English at DCU. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll take a quick break.